Hello, and welcome to the NVIDIA AI Podcast. I'm your host, Noah Kravitz. The more advanced our modern digital technologies become, the more we're using them to help us understand our past. My guests today are working at the forefront of this trend, using GPU-based deep learning algorithms to better categorize sherds, tiny fragments of ancient pottery, to help them understand the sophisticated pre-literature cultures of the American Southwest circa 825 to 1300 AD. Chris Donham and Leszek Pawlowicz are researchers in the Department of Anthropology at Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff, Arizona. Their paper in the June 2021 issue of the Journal of Archaeological Science details the technique they're using to analyze sherds and glean new insights into life hundreds of years ago. And they're here now to tell us all about it. Gentlemen, welcome, and thanks for taking the time to join the NVIDIA AI Podcast.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
So why don't you guys start by telling us a little bit about the paper and the research project?
All right. I guess I'll start. Throughout the American Southwest, there are thousands and thousands of archaeological sites dating to before Columbus discovered the New World, or at least the first European to discover the New World. Let me put it that way.
Right.
Many of these sites have fragments of pottery called sherds, and many of those have designs painted on them. And archaeologists use those designs to do things like associate a time period with a particular site, to talk about cultural affiliations, and also to take a look at trade relations between different areas, because different areas will make different designs and different kinds of pottery.
Right.
And archaeologists have been using this technique for close to a century now. But part of the problem has been that there's a certain amount of ambiguity in how you classify these designs. I mean, there are set definitions, but the way that archaeologists interpret these definitions can vary significantly. So you can have one person say that a sherd has one particular design associated with one particular type, associated with a particular time period. And another person can look at the same sherd and say, no, this is an entirely different type that is associated with an entirely different time. And our project has been to look at whether or not machine learning techniques, and specifically convolutional neural networks, can be used to remove some of this ambiguity and remove some of the subjectivity in classifying these sherds.
Before you get into how you came upon using CNNs and all of that, let me just step back for a second. Are those discrepancies you mentioned between different archaeologists, different researchers interpreting a particular sherd, differently? Is that just part and parcel of the business that we're dealing with the process of excavating fragments and trying to analyze them historically, and there will be differences of opinion, or is it something more objective that's happening?
I think that it's probably better to say that it's differences of opinion.
Okay.
There are for these types, descriptions of what kind of design elements, lines, dots, ticks, whatever, that define them. But the way that different archaeologists take those definitions and apply them to sets of designs can vary significantly.
Okay.
And I'll also point out that, as Leszek mentioned, this typology was created over 100 years ago, or I guess around 100 years ago, and it was done at a time when the archaeologists who created it had seen maybe, several thousand pot sherds, and I don't think they saw the full range of variation. So when they were defining these types, they tended to just work from what they had seen already. And where we sit today, we've probably, in the collections in museums, we have hundreds of thousands, if not, I don't know if it would be an exaggeration, I don't think so, to say that there might be over a million of those pot sherds in the museum collection. So there's a whole lot more variation than the typology was able to accommodate at the time it was created. And that's part of the problem.
Right. Makes sense. And so where did the idea to start using machine learning techniques to better understand the shards, where did that come from?
Well, I first started thinking about using computer vision techniques to classify pottery back around 2012 or 2013. And back then, I was thinking of using more of the classic computer vision techniques, which involved lots of hand tuning and tweaking. And I couldn't really find a good pathway towards adapting those to this particular technique.
Right.
Then around 2015 or 2016, I learned about machine learning and convolutional neural networks. And that seemed a far better approach to looking at this problem, because these machine learning methods basically teach themselves the critical, you know, design parameters that are associated with each type, rather than relying on you to twist and tweak knobs mm-hmm. to get them to work.
Right, right. Which is helpful when you're dealing with large data sets, obviously.
Yes.
I have a little different pathway to this. I wanted to find out back in the 1980s when I was a graduate student at the University of Arizona, I took a independent study course from one of my professors, Paul Fish, who turns out to be kind of instrumental in this particular study. But I was interested in facial recognition. I had seen an article in Scientific American about the potential for identifying human faces from images by a computer. And I wondered if that might be applicable to the complex geometric designs on pot shirts.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, back in those days, it was all metrics, interpupillary distance and the height of your nose and your lip and on and on.
Yeah.
And it was kind of analogous to the old numerical taxonomy approaches in biology. And as I recall, Paul Ehrlich had taken that approach to classify butterflies based on the metrics of their body shapes and wings and so on. And I think had concluded more or less that it was possible to do that, but it was extremely tedious and didn't result in much of an improvement. So I kind of put that on the back burner for a long, long time and kind of kept up with, you know, the Postal Service was having good success in identifying handwritten addresses and, you know, became, you know, kind of aware of what was going on in AI and some of the approaches that are out there now. So I think Leszek and I began to have conversations about this about, what would you say, Leszek, about 6 or 7 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And, you know, the hardware and the software, the programs just weren't there yet.
Right.
But they are now.
Yeah, the last 5 years or so, there's been a big acceleration in the advances in both. Let's dig into this particular study then. How did you tell us about it? I won't ask questions. I'll leave that to you.
Well, the very first step was to create a data set. And one of the big problems with creating a data set is if you have one person who takes a look at the images of thousands and thousands of shirts, they will assign particular, you know, types to these,
right.
But that is going to be just their opinion. So we collected four expert archaeologists who had at least 3 decades of experience, and in one case, closer to 5 decades of experience in looking at these shirts and assigning them to types. And we gave them basically pictures of all these sherds and said, can you put these into various, you know, can you classify them based on the design type? And then we collated all that information, and there were substantial disagreements on some sherds, and there was substantial agreement on other ones.
Mm-hmm.
So we created a consensus data set, one where most, if not all, of the classifiers agreed on a particular type, and used that as our training set. And then we started looking at various convolutional neural network models to see which one would work with our particular data set. And we used some of the convolutional neural network models that have been employed on the ImageNet dataset for photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that two of them, the VGG16 and ResNet50, seemed to give us reasonable results. And then we used an ensemble approach, training on both kinds of models and averaging out the result to see how well the models could predict the type of the shirt design in particular images.
Right.
If I could just back up just a second on that, I think we had started out thinking about using this approach for arrowheads, for stone artifacts.
Right, right.
That has a lot of complexity to it, the material, the flaking patterns, and on. So the pottery was chosen because it was a very contrasting geometric design against a light background, and it seemed to be very able to capture, we were able to capture that with a variety of different kinds of digital photographs. So there was a step prior to that where we had kind of decided that pottery was the way to go rather than stone tools. And that's, I mentioned that because stone tools are everywhere in this world. Pottery isn't necessarily, and archaeologists are keenly interested in classifying stone tools. I think we can get back to that someday.
Interesting. This would be a good time to mention to the audience, there's a great blog post with visual aids, several photographs of some of the pottery that you guys are talking about on the NVIDIA blog from June 23rd of 2021. Brian Caulfield authored it. Brian, who produces this podcast as well. So you may want to go back and take a look or even hit pause now and call up those photos so you can kind of have a visual guide as you're listening. But Chris, I apologize for interjecting there.
Oh, no problem. I'm interjecting myself. I do this sometimes because I think I'll forget if I don't shoehorn it in right now. So I want to mention, too, that the potential of this technique for teaching students is huge. And this was in the back of my mind when we were selecting artifacts to work with. I'm very aware of how well or how poorly students are able to internalize this typology and apply it consistently. And so that was kind of in my mind, too, was if we could come up with a way to machine classify this pottery in a more objective way, it might be a way to kind of circumvent what I see as a looming problem, which is that we no longer have the kind of master apprentice learning systems that we used to have in archaeology. The classes that we teach at the university have to have high enrollments. And, you know, these are very labor intensive, small enrollments. So I thought this was a really potentially very useful way to teach the typology to students.
Forgive my naivety here, but what are the advantages of an approach like this versus, pictures and textbooks?
Right. So I think Leszek will be able to speak to this more comprehensively, but it's the presence of the gradient maps, the heat maps that point out to a potential aspiring typologist what are the critical pieces of design that were used to make the decision to classify it one way or the other. And that goes beyond the ability of a person to verbalize what they're saying and just to show it graphically.
Right, right.
Yeah, I was going to expand a little bit on what Chris said. So, we have convolutional neural network models that are trained to recognize design types with a particular accuracy. But, one of the big problems or one of the big objections people have to neural network models and other machine learning models for that matter is that they can be a bit of a black box.
Right.
You plug something in and you get something out, but you're not really sure about the process. With convolutional neural networks, there are methods where you can actually query the model to tell you exactly what parts of an image were the most important in making its characterization. We use a technique called a GradCam that creates heat maps, which show which sections of the image the model considered the most important in making its decision and which sections it thought were less important. And using this approach, you can see, it gives you a direct feedback as to, what sections or what design elements of a particular shirt are the critical elements in picking out that type. And to a certain degree, they're going to agree with those classic definitions of, that were made by humans 100 years ago, saying these designs correspond with this type. But now you get a direct feedback. Whereas with human beings, you give them something and they come back with an answer. And then sometimes they can go ahead and rationalize the design elements that they used and whether or not those rationalizations match their actual thought process, which is quite often subconscious or unconscious, is an open question.
Oh, that's interesting. And so when I'm looking at the blog post now, as I'm listening to you, and there are pictures of pots, vessels, but then also pictures of the sherds, how big, and perhaps I should have asked you this at the top, but how big or how small are the sherds that you're dealing with?
For the most part, they're going to be probably no more than a couple of inches in size. That depends. There are times when you'll come across sherds that can basically be about the size of your hand, but you can also get ones that are very, very small.
Yeah.
It's always going to be a balancing act because if the elements or if the sherds are too small, they may not have enough design elements to allow you to make that kind of characterization.
Right.
So you need to have them at least a minimum size and have them have enough diagnostic design elements such that the convolutional neural network model can make a reasonable judgment as to what type it is.
I want to, speaking of interjecting, do it again. But I think there might be a missing piece here. One of the things about archaeology today is we don't excavate very often. We don't go into a place and dig it up. And I think that's kind of the public's image of archaeology is that we're always digging.
Sure.
But contemporary archaeology for a wide variety of reasons. One is that we hope to avoid damaging archaeological sites when there's a development of some kind. But we work with surface remains a lot. And we do a lot of what is called pedestrian archaeological survey, meaning go out and walk the landscape. And here in the Southwest, those objects are right there at the surface for you to see. And as Leszek mentioned, there are thousands of archaeological sites that contain tens of thousands, sometimes each or even more, potsherds at the surface. And so we're interested in accurately dating those sites, understanding their cultural affiliation. But it's modern archaeology is walking the landscape and looking at the surface. And so it becomes really critical for people to accurately identify the artifacts that they're seeing at the surface of the ground in order to make good decisions about what to do about a particular archaeological site if it's in the way of development.
You mentioned the possible applications of this approach in teaching archaeology as well as doing the actual research, and also mentioned, I think it was when you were talking about the four experts who you gathered to help build and classify the data set, that there were folks who have decades of experience. Is archaeology as a discipline on the wane? I remember reading in Brian's article that turnover is a bit of a concern, and you've got obviously, expertise in humans and these people with decades of experience out in the field and analyzing results and such. How is the field changing, and is it something that you're concerned about going forward, or perhaps optimistic that the introduction of new technologies and techniques like this might give the field a little bit of a boost, or is that not really a concern?
I think there have been some huge transformations in archaeology over the past several decades. One is that the locus of archaeological practice in the field has shifted from the universities and the museums to the private consulting firms. Mm. And so most of archaeology that gets done today is mandated by either federal or state or local laws that are designed to protect cultural resources from destruction when development comes along. And that is highways, any kind of ground disturbing activity. So what we have is a lot of archaeological field workers who move around quite a lot. They go from region to region. The kind of derogatory self-applied term that people use is shovel bum. The thing is, what that lends itself to sometimes is a lack of expertise in a particular region. When people come into a new area where they haven't worked before, they may not be familiar with the pottery types. And it's really hard at a university to teach people how to anticipate any possible archaeological pottery type or any other artifact types that they might encounter. So that's part of the problem, is this change in the institutional basis of archaeology and the way it gets practiced. And as a university professor, I'm very concerned with training a new generation of archaeologists to accurately identify pottery. I don't see that happening. We used to have regular conferences that were held at the museums that would get together and talk about the typology and perpetuate it and disseminate it. And that's not really happening so much anymore. So this kind of technological assist that can help us to impart, let's say, the decades or over a century of knowledge about pottery is hugely important to me as I come close to the end of my career. I've been doing this for quite a long time, and I can see that in the future we're going to need these kinds of, let's say, visually assisted graphic aids to help teach. And if this heads toward an app, an application that you could use on a portable device, so much the better, because then that adds a lot of objectivity and reliability to the process of classifying complex artifacts.
Right. So that actually leads me to my my next question, which is, I had heard something about an idea for a kind of app-driven searchable database of images, almost crowdsourcing the process a bit. Is that something you guys have been thinking about?
Yeah, we've definitely been thinking about it. I mean, and it's on several different levels. You can think of creating a smartphone app that people can take out in the field and sort of snap a photograph and have the convolutional neural network model come up with its best guesses as to what the particular type is. But you can also use this kind of approach to, once they snap that photograph, have it be sent off to a database of photographs. And then you can use the convolutional neural network model to find the closest matches in design types with other sherds. And that'll give you information about how that sherd relates to other sherds found in that area or some distance away. And that'll give you a feeling for how wide the culture is spread, what are the trade relationships, and so on.
And I think it's really important to think about the avocational archaeologists. We have hundreds of people that are kind of casually interested in archaeology, and they're out there on the landscape. They hike and they visit archaeological sites, and they're keenly interested in this stuff. But a lot of times there's no outlet for their knowledge or their discoveries. And many of the most important discoveries in archaeology have been made by not archaeologists, but citizens that are out there finding things. And you know, we only have so many archaeologists and so much time. So I can see a role for this in citizen science.
Right.
The idea of, you know, crowdsourcing, you know, we do it with birds and insects and all sorts of other
sure.
things.
Yeah.
I think this could be a way to really understand the larger landscapes of the Southwest if we had that kind of information coming in.
Well, somebody out there listening no doubt has the skills to get an app, get a database going. So perhaps we'll spark something here. So last question for you guys, and putting you on the spot a little bit here, so forgive me. But as you think about the work you've been doing with the neural networks and you know, building and testing this technique of using technology to analyze the sherds, what's something that stands out to you, either as kind of an aha moment in the process, or maybe something that was just kind of unexpected and surprising that came along the way as you were starting to apply, you know, deep learning and building the networks to do this work?
I think there were two moments that made me sort of sit up and realize that, yes, this is a technique that actually works, because we didn't know when we started whether or not this would be successful or not.
Right.
When we first started doing this, we were using very, very simple models because we were limited by the hardware that I had. I had to upgrade my NVIDIA graphics card to a more capable one to use some of the more advanced models. And the early models that we're using, very primitive, they were getting, you know, results that suggested it might work, but they weren't really all that outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think after we got advanced hardware and we looked at more some of these more advanced models, all of a sudden we got a situation where the computer was classifying these sherds by their design type with accuracies that were comparable to, in some cases, better than humans.
Right.
And that was sort of like, oh, this thing is actually going to work.
Yeah.
It's going to be successful. I guess the other moment was when I took a look at figuring out how to take a sherd image and then match it with its closest equivalents, because that opens up a whole range of possibilities in terms of how you classify, how you analyze the relationships between different designs. And that only happened, I think, last year. And that was like, oh, this is going to be really cool. We can
yeah.
create, you know, enormous databases where anyone can submit a picture of one of these sherds and then come back with what are the closest matches to those particular designs. And that has enormous applications in the future.
I'm going to agree with that, because that was the moment for me. And Leszek had come up with a term that is kind of amusing. It's the sherd engine, a search engine for sherds.
Well done.
Yeah. When he let me know that we had the ability now to match images to their nearest counterpart in a database of thousands of images. You know, I can't jump very high anymore, but I jumped up and down.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an amazing thing. And that goes back to my original interest in facial recognition.
Right, right.
I thought, oh my God, can we do this? And as it turns out, yes, we can.
Well, I don't want to get in trouble here, but better sherd recognition than facial recognition in some instances anyway.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, I mentioned that there's an article on the NVIDIA blog kind of going over the project and some great images to kind of put something into people's minds as they think about this for folks like me who aren't familiar or weren't familiar with sherds. But are there other places online, perhaps university webpages or personal webpages, anywhere else, where listeners might go if they want to find out a little bit more about the work that you're doing?
Well, if you go to the NVIDIA blog post, it will have a link to the article published in the Journal of Archaeological Science. And we had it published open access so that anyone could read it without having to subscribe or paying an article fee. And the article also has links to the actual programs we use for the classification and some other, you know, demonstrations of this particular technology. And I'm also going to give a big plug to the Southwest Virtual Museum, which is a site run by the Northern Arizona University Department of Anthropology, which has an enormous set of pages dealing with both sites and artifacts related to Southwest archaeology.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, and just if you just Google Southwest Virtual Museum, it'll bring that up for you immediately.
Perfect. All right. Well, Chris Downham and Leszek Pawlowicz, thank you guys so much for taking the time to talk about your work. For somebody like me who knows very little about the field, it's fascinating. And thank you also for being very easy to follow. It makes it easy to understand for somebody like me who's new to all of this.
All right. Thanks. Our pleasure. Help.